So when you're in startup mode, you do have to be in a predator state because you've got to move quickly. You've got to be very determined that you're going to make it. You're going to make that kill in terms of an animal, but you're also going to be strong. You're going to be focused. You're going to be courageous. Now I'm a lot older, obviously. Now I would much rather be in flock because flock gives me collaboration.
Thank you for joining us on Unlearn Everything. Today, I'm going to dive into the world of natural intelligence with my guest, Rosie Tompkins. Rosie has come up with a pretty interesting approach on how she's fostering and creating and nurturing leaders, both individually and in the corporate boardroom and just corporations in general. And so for today's episode, maybe we should all take our shoes off and go outside and do some grounding. I'm not really sure, but this episode is going to invite you to step out of the office and into nature, metaphorically, of course, because right now it's like 25 degrees here, and that's not going to happen for me. And I would just like to welcome you to the show, Rosie. Welcome. Glad to have you here.
Well, thank you for having me. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, it feels like it's been a long time in the planning. I know we've tried this a couple times before, but we had some technical difficulties and some other things. So anyway, I'm glad we're here today and we could union today on this show. So you heard me in the outtake, just really kind of the direction I want to take with this is your style of leadership development is a little bit unorthodox in the sense that your techniques employ different things that you might not necessarily consider for leadership training and development. So I thought we'd explore that and talk about how what you're doing is different than a traditional model. And I'd also like to explore, if we can, your take on what leaders are. What are the qualities that makes a leader a leader? Does that make sense? So anyhow, welcome to the show. So horses, nature, leadership, these are not necessarily qualities that one associates with leadership typically. How did you come upon this approach? And give us a little bit of background on who you are and what you're doing these days.
Yes, absolutely. So I would call myself probably a serial entrepreneur. I've had four companies and I didn't go to business school. So just to let you know that, you know, I didn't have that fine education. And mine came really from the seat of my pants type of leadership. But I was very fortunate to sell my first company to a PLC. And that kind of catapulted me into a very different situation where I was in a boardroom at the age of 30. And it very quickly dawned on me that, you know, IQ was incredibly important in business. That's why we have our jobs. That's why we, you know, appointed to positions. We have to use our intelligence to grow a business and to run a business. A lot of people know about IQ, obviously. A lot of people in business now know about EQ, emotional intelligence. Some people in business talk about SQ, spiritual intelligence. But for me, it was like when we were training people, it seemed like a three-legged stool. It seemed like we were covering all the kind of analytical side and the brain, but we were missing out on this incredible other sector, which I call NQ. And for me, that's like the fourth leg of a chair. So NQ stands for natural intelligence. And natural intelligence is the positive use of your instincts and your insights and your perception, which allows you to make decisions at speed. And that's what animals do in the wild. And they pick up on energy, they pick on other things from their body. And we talk about a lot in training about 90% of our communication being nonverbal. And yet we concentrate all the time on PowerPoint presentations, on that 10% of the verbal communication. So I always thought when I was running my businesses, what happens if I turn it on its head and I concentrate on that 90% of the nonverbal communication as animals do? And see whether we're kind of missing a trick somewhere along the line as humans. So that was what I've done. And when I describe natural intelligence to kind of really ground it for people, I'm sure most of your followers will know about the Hudson River landing with Captain Sully Sullenberger. Mm-hmm. So for me, that was that showed someone who was using their natural intelligence. Obviously, incredibly intelligent man. He was very experienced. He'd flown a lot. Many, many years of experience. But when he was told, given an instruction, he felt very quickly that that was the wrong decision. And he kind of combined all his intelligences to make a decision at speed to land on the Hudson River. And in doing so, saved 200 plus lives. Another example of kind of natural intelligence from the kind of non-academic side was that a friend of mine is a doctor, a consultant working with people with mental health problems. They had a very distressed patient who they were struggling to deal with and to comfort. And suddenly a nurse came in, and immediately her reaction was to sing a song. And as she sang that song, she was using her natural intelligence, what she felt was the right thing to do in that moment, and calm the patient down. So that's really the definition that I use to say, you know, we all have this natural intelligence. We just need to use it more.
So tell me a little bit about from this space, and I want to go into this natural intelligence because I'm fascinated by how people respond in situations. This fight or flight necessarily has something to do with it, but this emotional intelligence, it's sort of how what I hear you saying is that all of the different neurological and instinctive responses that we use as humans, they play into this sort of natural intelligence space. Where can you tell me, if you may, what was the pivotal moment for you that kind of led you into this space? You talked a little bit about, you know, some of your experience in the boardroom and some of your experience inside and outside that area. Was there a pivotal moment that was like, aha, that's exactly the direction I want to go?
Yes, absolutely. And I wasn't expecting it, as often it comes from a strange situation. But yeah, I was a guinea pig in a leadership trial. And for those of you out there that go on courses, somebody arrived late. And the facilitator, which wasn't myself, I was a participant, was a bit huffy about this person arriving late on the scene. And they said to her, you know, why are you here today? You know, what's your reason for being here? Nice of you to show up. You know, it's quite a kind of cynical view of this poor lady arriving late. And he said, why are you here today? And we had badges on. And she just looked over at me, and I think I may have smiled at her.
And wait, hold on. You said you had what on? Batches on? I didn't understand that.
Badges, you know, like.
Oh, badges. Yeah, badges. Got it. Sorry.
And she just looked at me and said, I'm here to meet Rosie Tompkins, which was a very big shock because I didn't know her from Adam and I had no idea why she was wanting to meet me. Anyway, it transpired at the coffee break. She came whizzing over to me and I thought, oh, here we go. And she said immediately, do you like horses? And I'm like, this is a business environment. Why would you be asking me about horses? But what transpired was that she wanted me to go with her to her center in Northampton, which is quite a long way from where I live, and basically to join her on a kind of another guinea pig trial to see what would happen in an arena with a horse, just at liberty with myself. And at that time, I thought she was barking mad. So I said yes, of course, because I always say yes to most things. And off I went to do this trial. And I'm used to horses. I've been around horses all my life. So I didn't think I was going to learn anything. But my company was going through a buyout. We were being bought out by a big corporate organization. And I thought, well, let's see what happens. So I went into the arena with what I didn't realize was it was a Lipizzana stallion, which is a horse used for dressage and for very high level kind of competing in, like, I'm sure you've heard of the Spanish riding schools. Mm-hmm. And this horse was at liberty. It was a stallion.
That's the ones where the horses are doing all that delicate prancing and dancing, and they're absolutely able to, like, do these insanely delicate maneuvers and whatnot. Yeah.
And my instruction was to go into the arena with nothing. I wasn't riding it. It was on the ground with no, you know, head collar, no bridle, no saddle, and find his potential. So I went into the arena on my own, the door shut, and there I was on with this horse. And within, I would say, 5 or 10 minutes, I realized what I was doing to my team in business, because I had expectations of how it was going to be rather than allowing it to flow. So the one thing that I kind of, as I say, omitted to do was he went off on a full gallop and came back to me and started doing these amazing flying changes, which I'm sure some of your clients will know about. But as you say, high prancing, you know, very fast movements, very spectacular. And then when he'd finished, I didn't do anything. And he turned around and kind of walked to the other end of the arena. We were on a standoff. So he was at one end of the arena, I was at the other. And we're both looking at each other. And the coach, who was up in the gods somewhere in the seating area, said, what does he need from you most of all in this situation? And I was thinking, what does he need? You know, he's just shown me his potential, what he's able to do. What does he need from me? And I suddenly realized he needed someone to say, well done, to say, give him praise, to give him encouragement, to say, you know, you're amazing. You know, you've just shown me what you can do. And I'm so, so delighted and so kind of lucky to have been able to see this. And at that moment, I was just selling my company. So my team and myself were in exactly that situation. I was trying to do all the forward meetings and I wasn't communicating well with my team. And they were feeling very kind of hard done by. They weren't being kind of congratulated. They weren't being stroked. They weren't being given any praise. So they thought there was something wrong. They thought that there was some kind of, I was in difficulty financially. They assumed these stories because I wasn't giving them what they needed at that time. And it was a huge moment for me because I was able to go back from that experience with the horse and realize that I needed to bring the team together and say, this is what I'm planning. This is what I'm trying to achieve. And I need your help with this. So within that 10 minutes, it changed my whole trajectory.
So thank you for sharing that story. So how does this concept really challenge traditional views on leadership and team dynamics? Like, tell me how what you're doing and what you just described, how is that different than what a traditional model might show?
Because the difference is that you're out there and it's experiential. You don't know what's going to come up. When you're in a classroom, you have no ability to see how it affects another living being. So when you're working with nature, they show up like a mirror to what's actually going on. And whereas in a classroom, you can fake it. You can say that I'm an amazing leader. You know, I'm so transparent. I'm so courageous. I know what I'm doing. You put someone in front of a horse and it's what the horse feels that you notice. So the horse has to feel three things. So all it's asking, it wants to know, am I safe? Can I trust you? And who's leading right now? And in life, when we meet each other for the first time, those are the three questions we need answering. Can I trust you? Am I safe? And who's leading right now? And that's all the horse needs to do. And then if it doesn't feel trust, it doesn't feel safe, it won't work with you.
So what I'm hearing you say is the classroom or the boardroom or the office, that's more of a cognitive decision-making. Whereas yes. when you're out on a farm or you're out in nature and you're dealing with something that you don't really have prior context to, that's more of an intuitive, almost instinctive decision. Is that kind of a fair?
It is, but it's also very important in business because, as I just said, communication is 90% or almost 90% nonverbal. So how our energy is in business, how we walk into the room, how we perform, how we are, you know, how we mellow, how we watch the opposition or the competitors around the table, how they are. You need to be picking up that information in a different way. It's like an animal is sensing. It's a sensing process that incorporates everything you have, all the intelligences, not just the analytical kind of mindset.
Nonverbal cues.
Yeah.
Emotional cues, things of that nature. So, sorry, let's just back up a minute. So in your programs, and you have several different types of programs, you have team and you have individual, and all of them involve being with horses?
No.
Or there's other elements?
There's other elements. I mean, we can't, you know, not always fortunate enough to use horses. It depends where we are. But I have models that I have created that show how nature can really help us. And we need to listen to nature. So, for example, you know, resilience. If I'm in a classroom, I talk to people about, you know, you don't have to go out to Africa and watch the sunrise over the, you know, the Serengeti in order to be with nature. Nature, we are nature. So a lot of people think we go for a walk in nature. We are nature and we are an animal. We're just a very sophisticated animal and a different species. So nature is all around us. So even as simple as a little spider that's stuck in the corner of a door frame, you know, we brush it aside without a second thought. That little spider is an architect and he has to build that web yet again and again and again. And he does that tirelessly. So when I'm talking about resilience, you can refer to the spider and how he, you know, he uses his life and his strength to keep building that web. And again, it's very inspiring to think of what nature does in the wild. You know, the fact that, you know, that the acceptance that nature has for its own and for others. And I always say when I'm doing kind of courses with the one-on-one that self-acceptance is massively important, to know that somewhere, whatever you look like, whatever color you are, what where you come from, what culture you are, there are animals that are what we would say would probably be quite ugly. So I always refer to the naked mole rat. I don't know whether you've seen a naked mole rat, but
I've seen naked mole rats on a regular basis because I have two cats that hunt them for a living. So yes.
Oh, okay.
And on a daily basis, they bring them back to the house.
Okay, so they're not the most attractive creatures on the planet, are they? However, that little creature has a massive long life. It lives to 30 years old and plus, and it is completely, it cannot catch cancer. It's been, you know, it is completely immune to cancer. And also, you know, it obviously finds its mates, and it obviously is very attractive to another naked mole rat. So what I'm saying in nature is that there's no, I talk about it a lot, is this acceptance and this, you know, we're so obsessed in our human world with internal and external validation, and we seem to always want to have external validation, whereas animals don't need that. They have their own internal validation. So they're happy as they are. They're on purpose, doing what they need to do out there in nature without any interference with us. And maybe there's a lesson to learn from that.
So I understand the whole idea of being in nature. I spend an exorbitant amount of time outside whenever, wherever I can. Mm-hmm. But I'm not seeing the connection yet, and I'm not trying to insult you, so please don't take it that way. Because you use an example of a spider, for example. A spider has a sort of conditioned response that it does on a daily basis. It just makes a web. That's what it does. It's mm-hmm. it's built to survive and using just a few core elements of its instinctive purpose: build a web, find a mate, make eggs, rinse and repeat. How many ever times of a life cycle of that spider has? So how can I learn to be a better leader by observing the techniques of a spider or being in the ring with a horse outside of just sort of going to this? And it's kind of it's a novel event for me. So I'm sort of absorbing information right then and there. But yeah. The information that I'm absorbing, how can I take that and use it back in real time to either run my businesses, become a better leader, be a better father, be a better CEO? Tell me that connection. I'm not seeing it just yet.
Okay. So I'm going to just share with you one of my models. So it's called Pro Predator Model. A lot of people in business know about predator. They know about predator. They use it all the time. Dog eat dog in business, all of that thrown to the lions, all of those kind of similes or metaphors. So this particular model that I use tries to open up people's thinking in a different way. So in the wild, you know, we know there are predators, and we know that predators stand for often the big cats. You know, they're focused, they're strong, they have tunnel vision, they go for it, they go for the kill, and they make the kill, and they're aggressive normally. On the other hand, we've got a prey animal, which is flight. Yeah, so we've got the fight, and now we've got the flight. And the flight is just as important as the fight in a business. So you need to be able to see that sometimes your business might want to be on a different axis, which I call a flight, because it needs to be agile. So an animal that's a prey animal tends to have, it tends to be a gazelle or a deer or something that can move at speed. So again, it works at speed, it's got peripheral vision, it's agile. So you can look at your business and say, right now, do I need my business to be a predator or a prey animal? There's great strengths in both. Like all leadership positions, you have a positive and a negative, or what I call a shadow side of business or a shadow side of leadership. And the most important thing about leaders is to know your shadow side. So just to focus on the prey and the predator, once it's got, you know, it's achieved its purpose, control, strength, there is a downside to predator, as we well know. A predator can become very aggressive. It can become self-obsessed. It can become controlling. It can have an all or nothing mentality. But understanding that is part of the game. So the next axis is across the middle. And it's two areas that we don't ever talk about in business. One is called freeze, which animals use a lot. And on the other side of the axis is flock. Yeah, flock. So when I do this and I work in business, I say I'm not always in the outside with animals. I would show this up to the board or whoever I was working with and say, where is your business right now? Is it in prey? Is it in freeze? Is it in flight? Or is it in flock? And where is it right now? And where do you want to go to? So again, with freeze, you're probably thinking, what on earth is the positive of being in a freeze state? Well, we've just been through it. We've just been through lockdown. And everyone was in freeze then. And again, some people found that really a time to take stock, to reinvent themselves, to kind of really look at what's going on, to nourish themselves. Other people found it really difficult and they went into shutdown and overload and powerlessness. Yeah. As a leader, you make this decision which of those you feel and which is appropriate right now. Likewise with flock. So to again give myself an example of myself, I've had to be predator all my life because I'm always doing startup businesses. So when you're in startup mode, you do have to be in a predator state because you've got to move quickly. You've got to be very determined that you're going to make it. You're going to make that kill in terms of an animal, but you're also going to be strong. You're going to be focused. You're going to be courageous. Now I'm a lot older, obviously. Now I would much rather be in flock because flock gives me collaboration. So I can look at animals in the wild and I can see how birds use flock to literally rotate the leadership so that they can rest. You know, if we think about flock, if you think of a flight of geese, how they support each other when they're flying in formation. And when I'm in freeze, as I say, I use that to take stock. Where am I going next? What am I doing? To really reassemble the business and think, are we going in the right direction? So I'm using the kind of metaphors and nature as a kind of a structure that then you can apply to the business. So where are you now and where do you want to go to?
So I'm in predator stage right now because I launched a new business in the last year. So by going through one of your workshops or seminars, you would teach me to be more introspective about where my business is using these innate skill sets that I may not be tapping into because I'm just not in nature any longer. And then I'm taking those and I'm using those to my advantage. I understand that, but why do you have to take people out into nature to see it? Is that just so they have sort of a hands-on experience?
No, because you cannot see yourself. You need to be able to see yourself as others see you. And nature does that. So when you work with horses, and then, as I say, they're not, they're at liberty, the horses. So when you're going through the challenges and the structure that I build for the day, you will see yourself as others see you. And that is a massive insight that we don't normally get. Because as I say, horse has no ego. It's not interested in what car you drive, how much money you have in the bank, whether you're a celebrity or not. It cares about whether, as I say, whether he can trust you, whether he's, as I say, you're going to lead him, and whether he's safe. Because we're a predator and he's prey. Why should a horse want to work with us? Because obviously their life is in our hands, and yet they do. And you can build trust through those ways. And that's the same with an organization. You can't go into action or with a team unless they really trust you.
So let's use me as an example right now. So I launched a new business over a year ago, and I'm still in the infancy stages of developing it. So I'm in this prey capacity. Yeah. What could I learn through one of your workshops? If I were to go through one of your programs, what would I learn as my output kind of headed back in after the program?
Okay. So you'd see yourself as others see you for a start. So you'd understand much more about your own leadership ability. And whether that's, as I say, not only the strengths of that, but also the shadow side. So you've got to watch out because you have a propensity, you know, propensity to do
something. Wait, let me pause you there. Yeah. So I want to actually physically go into this if I can. So visualize where I am. So I'm attending one of your workshops. Mm-hmm. Where might I be? I might be staring at spiders. I might be in their horse ring. Like, tell me a little bit about one of the programs that I might be in right now.
Okay, so you'd start in the classroom. We'd go through some of these models. We'd work out what it is you want to go into context, what it is you need in your business right now. You've just said you're starting up. Are you building a team? Do you need other strengths around you? Are you open to having people that have very, very different ideas to you as part of your team? Do you want a creative team? Do you want a driven team? Do you want a team? Do you want other people that are, as I say, very different to you? Because the danger is in business is that we go, and I prove this with the horses, is that what you see is what you think you see. So the initial exercise for that, so as I say, we talk about all these things. I'd find out what the context was. Where are you going? Where are the challenges? What is going on? So far, for example, when I worked with the England rugby, the context was very much about peripheral vision.
Let's keep this about me. So I don't want to interrupt you, but let's keep this about me for a minute. So my central core need right now is business development and lead generation. That's really kind of where I am. We have our business model built out. We understand the value that we offer to the world. We understand what makes us unique. We're clear on our mission. I'm clear on my vision of where I want this company to go. So now the next space we're operating in right now is finding niche sales leads for us to sell our service to. So now using your model, how would you instruct us to be more introspective and understand that perspective a little bit better?
Okay, so again, you know, if I had that clearly as the brief for the day, then we'd organize the kind of context to serve that purpose. And one of the things that would probably be a great surprise to you would be actually signing the contract with the client or finding the client. And so the horses would act as a kind of interpreter to how you are behaving with your customer. So for example, it's always very difficult to explain when it's obviously experiential, but basically, there's a circle on the ground. I ask you to bring the customer, which is the horse, into the circle, which is signing the contract. And then we observe how you do it.
You go first. But I need to understand the circle. So you're directing me to be in an interplay, sort of like a role-playing situation with my horse.
I'm saying to you, go out and go and get your customer and sign the contract. Let me see how you do it. And the customer is at liberty, which they are, and you are entitled to use your leadership skills. Obviously, verbal skills will not work. I want to see how you step up to the challenge.
Of selling and getting the horse to sign the contract metaphorically. Yes. So based upon my personality and my current energy at that point in time, the horse might be skittish. It might be reading my energy and seeing that I'm a bit anxious because the horse is so big, and so I'm sort of overwhelmed. And so it's my job to get into that ring and calm myself and utilize the proper energy channels in terms of communicating with the horse properly.
Yeah, just like, you know, as a customer, sometimes you're so excited about selling to this person, you're overbearing. You know, you've got this energy that is absolutely, you know, for them is terrifying. They're going to run in the other direction because they don't want to be sold like that. You know, the high pressure salesman, car salesman of the past, you know, that I'm sure put most people off ever trying to buy a car. You know, maybe this customer, it's about reading what your customer's needs are. And are you actually working out what those are and applying them? So that you may have to change, you may need to be more adaptable with your kind of connection with your customers and the way you go about your business. And it shows up so quickly. As you say, you know, go on.
So no two horses are going to be the same as our no two clients will be the same. So in this particular exercise, I learned to, I'm just going to throw out some skill sets. In this circle with the horse, I learned to calm my nerves. I learned to not be pushy with the horse. I learned to sort of meet the horse where the horse is and then kind of follow its lead and then guide it down into the sales cycle. Is that sort of what's happening? Okay. How does that transfer to, okay, so I leave the horse. I had a fantastic experience. I sold to this particular horse, if you will. Now, how does that translate into future situations when I have a completely different client, a completely different process, a completely set of innate characteristics that I'm dealing with? I learned one core element with working with the horse now, but in future state, how do I utilize that effectively?
You've learned so much more about yourself. You've learned something, internal validation. You might have been scared before you went out there. You didn't need anyone else. Nobody else is giving you advice. You had to work it out yourself. You had to calm your energy, as you say. You had to prove to the horse that you were worth leading. You were worth following. that you had to recognize the energy when it was too much, too little, too great. How to, as I say, when you get the horse to the contract, to not get so excited that you then frighten it away, that you stay calm, let the customer do it in their own time. So you come out with another version of yourself that you will never get from anywhere else.
And in terms of, do I get to bring the horse with me going forward so that I'm, whenever I have to replicate these situations, I'm being as smart as I'm joking. Okay, so I understand where this is going now. Sorry. And I'm only asking these questions so that I can have a clear understanding of it. So I've learned a lot about myself in this model. Yeah. And going forward, how do I retain this information so that I can always have it at my disposal? Because one of the things that I've always sort of harped on is you go to these conferences and, you know, you sit in the classroom and you sit in the after parties and you do all these things and you're like, you have your notebook of all these fantastic ideas that you worked on and these great things that you're going to take home and all these amazing mantras and affirmations and you're going to step into your office and your world after the fact. And within 2 weeks, you sort of like throw it by the wayside. It's like, oh, I completely forgot about that stuff. There's no, I didn't do my workbooks. I did nothing. It's just sort of like, okay, now here's where I am. So how does your model instill a retention, if you will, so that we can utilize these skills on a regular basis going forward and not just throw it away, baby in the bathwater?
I'm grateful that you brought that up because that is the main part of my business, is that it is a memorable anchor. You will never forget this experience. You know, it is like Marmite, you love it or hate it, but you don't forget it. Because it's your moment. It's not some facilitator telling you to be X, Y, Z. It's actually your memories of what happened, those aha moments on that course. And I work, as I say, with big corporate organizations. And as you say, they go to all these leadership conferences and then, you know, they've given a written report and it goes straight in the drawer and they never look at you ever again. But they remember what happened when X. And I never know what's going to happen out in the arena with the horses. So it really tests my mettle to be able to ground it back into the organization and say, you know, what's going on here? I see some major problem here. Is that happening in your business? And then we can unpick it.
So I see where you're going with it, and I see the value of it. It's almost like the novelty of the experience because it is experiential. It's not dissimilar to what I do in my world when I work with clients. Rather than, let's just use photography, so we're creating content for you, Rosie, rather than just like bringing you into the studio and, you know, taking a few snaps here and there, I create these experiential adventures for your photography or your videography so that the moment that you're creating with me is more of an immersive experience so that you can show up as your true self as opposed to trying to have like this facade of something you're trying to be or someone you're trying to be, right? So I get that. But I guess where I'm struggling with it is I'm one person, so I have this experiential situation with you where I learn to sort of confront some of my shadows and those sorts of things. And because it's so experiential, I better remember it. I'm better able to retain that information. But as I step into the real world, there are so many other different nuances and subtleties that are going to affect the outcome of a situation for me. How do I use that one thing that I learned about myself doing that shadow work to deal with all of these other subtleties and nuances and all the other types of people that I'm engaging with? How do I draw back on that experience to sort of compound it in other ways, I guess is what I'm trying to ask.
Yeah, because you've learned something that, you know, most people need in buckets, which is confidence and ability, your own self-ability to lead. And that's the equation that I go through. Nobody's ever going to admit as a leader that sometimes they have doubts. Mm. You know, this experience says that whatever comes up in life, in your business, in your life generally, you have everything you need inside you. You don't need anything else. You've got it all. And you just need to remember that. As we are animals, we survive. We wouldn't be on the planet today if our ancestors hadn't gone through all these kind of horrendous experiences to get us here. And it's in our DNA and it's there. And we've overridden it with all this kind of concern about, have I got the right qualifications? Do I look the right part? All that external validation piece. When I'm saying, go back to what animals do best. They're on purpose, just like you said. They know what they're doing. They don't need anyone to tell them anything and they get on with it.
Yeah,
and they don't have any worries.
I find it really compelling to hear you say sort of the outside nature piece because, you know, I don't know the data on this, but I know, if you were to look at the amount of time we as humans are spending indoor now versus what we spent 50 years ago, you know, it's like, this is not a factual number, but I think it's something like 80% less time outdoor than just 50 years ago. And I can't help but think that we're losing a lot of different pieces of who we are by just locking ourselves in these offices and inside of our homes and not engaging with nature and not engaging with other humans in a collaborative capacity. So you mentioned a lot about unlocking one's, I think you called it implicit wisdom, strength, and authentic voice is, I think, what I sort of heard from a lot of things I've unearthed about you. How does this unlearning process unfold in your program? So I come to one of your programs. I have a set of context around a very specific outcome. How do you unlearn that by being in nature and working with the animals? Can you describe a little bit more about that?
Yeah, I mean, like you say, I mean, very few people now have the opportunity. You know, we live in high-rise cities, et cetera, and experiences with nature are becoming less and less. And how sad is that? And I think that it's a part of us that we are, you know, I say that we are a communal animal. You know, an isolated horse on the prairie is a dead animal, but an isolated human is the same. You know, unfortunately, you know, if we get into a situation where we're isolated, we're not meant to be there. We are communal. We are meant to be as a group or a herd and help and collaborate together. So, yeah, it's really, really important that we have access and we have to keep the learning about what's going on in the wild really in the forefront of our heads. You know, and I say to people, even if you can't get out there, look at the sky. Look at every night, the clouds, the fact that we're part of something bigger than ourselves. And remember that is giving us this stability. The sun is always going to come up. The moon is always going to shine. That is what really is important. The rest of the sophisticated animal can get on with it. But if you don't have those kind of building blocks within you, as I say, you're that three-legged chair again. You know, you haven't got that fourth leg to stabilize yourself.
So it's fascinating information. And the type of people that you work with are typically CEOs. Tell me a little bit about the type of ideal client that you like to work with.
Well, I can just tell you a very quick story because it's the one that most people love in my book. And it was about a guy who, very successful, came from Pakistan, CEO of a software company, made millions, lives in London, works in an office without any windows. And he came to me on a one-to-one, which is unusual. I don't normally do one-to-ones. And his context was, you know, he felt like he had everything that everybody wanted, you know, and yet he was still incredibly unhappy. And he wanted to know why. And that is obviously happens a lot with people who are very wealthy. So I decided to do, you know, again, I didn't plan it particularly, but I decided to try to show him how you can feel leadership. Yeah. So rather than be a leader, I wanted them to feel how leadership is in different ways. So very, very simply, I mean, you can try it at home. I blindfolded this chap. I didn't know him from Adam. And I walked him round and then I used different kind of touch mechanisms. So at one point I was pushing him hard from behind and he was blindfolded. How did that make him feel? Then I was doing it very kindly, you know, holding his hand, holding his arm, taking him around very gently. How did that feel as a leader? And the last part of the exercise, I mean, I did four or five of these, was I took him into the arena and I put his hands on a living horse.
Was he still blindfolded or no?
He's still blindfolded.
He's still blindfolded, okay.
So he didn't know he was going...
But he didn't know he was going to be touching a horse.
No, not at all. And so I took him into the arena and I put his hands on the top of this horse and I just waited. And incredibly, he had an extraordinary reaction to this. And he, I mean, you know, I say, not all my clients weep and wail, but in this case, he did weep and he was shaking heavily. And I said, you know, obviously stayed with him for a while. And then I said, could you articulate to me what you're feeling right now? And he said, it's everything. You know, I was born in the foothills of Pakistan. And he said, my life was always with nature. And he said, as I've become more wealthy and more successful, I've stopped having any outlet to nature. And I really miss it. And I've lost this connection piece. And that's why I'm so unhappy. And that was it. That's all I did. And he left happy. He didn't want to do anything else. He said, you've changed my life. And he said, I'm going to go back now. I'm going to bring someone in to run my business so I can get out into nature more and I can use this as inspiration for the future.
It's very interesting. My daughter, she's a senior in high school right now, and one of the things that her high school is enabling her to do is, as part of her senior project, she has to create a change of course event within the high school, and everyone in the school has to do this. Sort of like similar to writing a thesis statement in college, but it's for high school. I think it's a phenomenal program. And mm-hmm. And one of the things that she's working on right now is the fact that schools themselves basically lock you up for 8 hours a day. They don't, you don't go outside anymore. There is no mm-hmm. recess. There is no PE outside. There's no creative learning. There's no outdoor environment. You're just sitting in a row for 8 effing hours listening mm-hmm. to somebody talk at you. And so one of the programs that she's working right now is a hypothesis that if the school were to just 1 hour a day allow students outside in an outdoor learning environment, whether it be sitting around a campfire metaphorically or sitting around a tree or taking their shoes off and sitting in the grass, that the retention of information, the retention of knowledge, and the collaborative capacity of learning would increase exponentially. And so she's got data and she's running experiments right now. It's really phenomenal. Why did we get away from this? What's your theories around why, as humans, we've gone indoors so much? Why is that? We know that the data shows otherwise, that being outside in nature, grounding, taking your shoes off and walking through grass or touching trees or spending time around trees or horses, for example. Like, we know that there's all sorts of programs all over the world where people use equine therapy for mentally ill or people who are suffering from depression. And I don't understand the science behind it other than there's like a different energy vibration that horses emit. And so, you know, you connect on a different level. But why, as a society, have we gotten away from outdoors so much?
Well, my view is that, you know, because we think we're so sophisticated that we don't need the basics anymore. And how wrong are we? You know, we know we are sophisticated, and yet, you know, animals would be far better off without humans. Fundamentally, they will all be a much better place if there weren't any humans around. But yeah, I mean, how sad is that? And that's why I do this work. This is what my passion is. That, can you imagine if you had an NQ program in every school where they could touch an animal and feel it, and feel its fur, and to hear it, you know, its heart beating, and to understand it. I mean, David Attenborough says, you know, if you've never been near an animal, you're never going to understand it. You have to have that touch element, and most people never have that. And, you know, we have this explosion in the UK. Everyone has a dog. Everybody. It's a dog city. You know, everybody has it. And they love it, and they get so much from the dog, but they think that's all there is. You know, there's a whole world of nature out there that is, you know, there to be enjoyed, to be understood, to be, as I say, inspired by. And yet we are thinking we're going to get it all from the internet or from books. And we are an animal. We need that connection. It's the connection piece. Just like I was telling you about that CEO, he was absolutely lost because he hadn't got that connection anymore. Mm. And yet he'd had it as a child.
Part of me wants to go down a rabbit hole on this conversation because I feel that there's something more conspiratorial to the idea of us pushing us all indoors. But I'll leave it at that because I do understand the power and the benefit of being outside. And so are you doing programs where you're working with schools and working with corporations where you're trying to instill programmatic elements to get people outdoors more and in nature? Or is this, you're just kind of working in a one-on-one capacity with individuals as they seek you out?
No. I very rarely work one-on-one. I mainly work with big organizations, big teams.
Well, no, sorry. Let me rephrase that question. Are you in a reactive mode of your learning? So you're just working with people who come to you, or are you proactively working and trying to push this methodology out into the ethos of corporations, schools, et cetera, where you're teaching them to be outdoors and in nature more often?
Yeah, I mean, I really want to challenge the status quo. That's my trajectory. I love doing this work, but it's much more important that I'm talking about it, that I'm out there, I'm discussing it. I'm you know, as you say, out in schools, wherever I can get. Well, this is the reason why I've written the books. Mm. You know, this is why I'm doing the podcast, is because I'm desperate to get this work out there. As I say, EQ was a transformation in business all those years ago, and yeah. I reckon this next one will be NQ. We've got to wake up to this because of all the mental health problems we have, all the overload, the overwhelm in business. Unless we have that space to be like animals do, we're in big difficulty, and everyone knows it, but they don't know how to apply it.
So let's talk about some things, because not everybody's going to be able to come to England to work with you.
No.
What are some things that we can do now in our daily lives, whether we work from home or we work in an office or we're busy working at McDonald's, whatever it is that we're doing, what are some techniques that we can do ourselves? And I want to talk about this because I still want to get to leadership in our last half of our last quarter of our call. What can we be doing now to become more instinctive and more outdoors and unlearning some of the stuff that we are doing every single day?
Well, I agree. Not everyone can come to the UK, but I would say if you have a chance to have an experience, an equine experience, and you can afford it, obviously, to don't go and do that, because there are so many places in America. I've got lots of contacts over there. And it is so worthwhile. Everyone that goes on it says, wow, you know, that was an extraordinary experience. So if you can, please do that. Certainly for yourself, I mean, it's about really digging deep into who you are as a person. You know, you're so busy when you're in a leadership position like you are, you're running a new business. Please make the time for this NQ part of your world. It's so important, even if it's just, you know, a walk in a garden or looking up at the sky or something, to just give yourself time to be and switch off that analytical mind for a second, you know, to give yourself that chance. But obviously my book's there. I've got online programs that can teach you this work. We've got, as I say, one-to-one books. I've even written a film about this. So, you know, I am very proactive in what I'm trying to do to get this work out there, because I know it works. And I know the demand that I have from big corporates is enormous, and that they get such beneficial results from their employees that, you know, they come back time and time again and bring different courses. And I'm only one person with obviously an extended team, but it needs a lot more kind of, you know, interest and exposure in order to get this work out there.
Well, we should have a conversation about that offline for a shameless plug, because that's what we do on our end, is help people expose and share their brand message. So if you're interested in having that, sorry, shameless plug, but I have to. So people can find you online at instinctive.com. That's hyphen stinctive, the letter N, right?
It's n-stinctive.com. Yeah. And
so,
then,
so and I'll put that, sorry, I'll put that in the show notes, but it's N, just the letter N like Nancy, hyphen stinctive.com. Yeah. And on your website, I saw, so you have ultimate retreats that involves these sort of like custom tailored programs for organizations, whether it's using horses or anything else that you come up with. You have online courses where any of us can just go online right now. And you also have a couple of books, The Power of Natural Intelligence, which I started kind of browsing through last night. I don't have a copy of it, but I found a bunch of different chapters of it that I just started breezing through. And then you have another book called Let Nature Be Your Compass, right? And so, yeah. So these are some areas where people can learn more about what this instinctive natural intelligence modality is, right?
Yeah. So Let Nature Be Your Compass. I wanted a business book. It's aimed at business leaders, people who are leaders, but I wanted a book that you could pick up, you know, if you're on an airplane. So it's a book you can read quickly on a flight or something like that, which hopefully will inspire you to think in a different way, challenge your thinking, basically. Mm. And it's on Amazon, so you can pick that up anytime on Amazon. And it's, as I say, it's aimed at people who are looking for something different, a bit jaded with what's out there. And you know, the training programs that, you know, all the PowerPoint trainings that most companies go through, I mean, they're just like death by PowerPoint. We all know that. So this is a new way of really kind of motivating and growing your kind of your team in a different way.
Brilliant. Yeah. For the last part of the call, and we have a few minutes left, I'd like to dissect, if you will, your version of what leadership is. And I was actually having this conversation with my other daughter the other day. You know, she said, you know, Dad, I'm kind of shy and demure and these sorts of characteristics, but yet I still do a bunch of other things that nobody else does. Does that qualify as leadership? And it's a really good question, because I think a lot of times, especially in this predator, to borrow your term, this predator-based world that we live in, people sort of think that, you know, the only types of leaders that can exist are the people that are sort of front and center of everything, and the people who are leading the charge, and the people that are heads of organizations. But leadership really kind of comes in a lot of different sizes, shapes, and colors, doesn't it? And I'm curious if you could just sort of share with me what your version of leader embodies.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I use different techniques to work with teams. And one of the kind of techniques I use is something called five voices. I don't know if you heard that. It's not my organization, but I'm a qualified, you know, instructor. For
five them. As in the number five.
Yeah, five said? Voices. Yeah. It's a fantastic system because it really respects different leadership styles. And it, when you understand it, you can see yourself very clearly and you know whether your voice is louder than other people's. So I'm a pioneer. And as a pioneer, I have a very loud voice. And I know that I don't always listen carefully. So what I, when I know my team and I know all their voices, so you become either a pioneer, a nurturer, et cetera, it allows me to say that always I make the nurturer, which sounds like your daughter, speak first. Because otherwise she'll be overshadowed by the bigger voices in the team. Mm-hmm. And that value that she brings, which is extraordinary, because she'll be a leader in a different way, will be overshadowed unless she's allowed to speak. Mm-hmm. And in most companies, the pioneers are the ones that rule the roost. And they do that at their, what's the word, missing out on the creativity of so many others. Similarly, I say the five voices in the pro-predator model.
I said this. Sorry, there's a slight delay in our. I didn't mean to interrupt you. I said the same thing to her, very similar to what you just described, that, you know, leaders come in all sizes, shapes, and colors. And while she may not be the captain of the soccer team, you know, and I'm using that as an example because she's a soccer player, football player, she's also one of the most hardworking people on the team. And because of her work ethic, she inspires other players on her team to sort of do the types of things that she does on the team. I was like, that's a form of leadership. Or she started this new club at her school where she is helping underage girls who are having mental health issues or who need collaboration or need homework help. And she's partners with the upper class women to help younger class girls have a sort of a mentor program, if you will. And I'm like, that right there is leadership. So yeah. For me, leadership is it can imbue itself in all different ways. It's not just someone who has the loudest voice.
Yeah, and one of the exercises I do, obviously I haven't got time to share it with you, but one thing that is really, really important to understand with horses is that they run as a herd, as I mentioned. And I'll ask them to tell me who the alpha male and the alpha female are of the herd, which is how horses run. And extraordinary in a herd of horses, always the alpha female that leads the herd. The alpha male is at the back. So the female runs the direction of the herd and the male is protection at the rear if something's coming in from the back to, you know, coyote or something. But within the herd itself, everybody has a leadership skill. So there'll be horses that find water, horses that find mineral, horses that brood mares that look after the young, who teach them, protect them, learn. And so that whole idea of understanding that can be then impacted on someone like your daughter, who is you're all leading for the good of the whole. It's not just for yourself, it's for others. That's true leadership. So when you ask me about true leadership, it's about not about me. It's about how I serve. How do I use my leadership for the benefit of others? And that's what your daughter's doing. And that's what it is. It's about rotational leader. Who has the ability and the skills and the strength right now to lead the business? It shouldn't always be the same person.
It depends on the team. I love that. It's more of a collaborative approach and kind of. I love that as the example you used with the flock and you know, geese, for example, I think was the example you used. Mm-hmm. You know, you have different leaders that head the point of the flight, and then they sort of and then they rotate in and out like the draft. I saw the most fascinating show one time. It was on penguins and how the male penguins, when the females have the babies, then they head off and they leave and they head back out to the ocean to get fish, which they're going to bring back for the babies, but they're gone for like weeks at a time. and all of the males, because the temperatures are like sub-zero, they rotate in the central part of the core of the flock of penguins. I guess they're called flocks. I know what they're called. But they sit in this little dance where they all huddle around each other. And everyone who's on the outside has this rotation where they move to the interior. So they too get an opportunity to be warm, and the interior people move out. And so it's sort of like, that's what I kind of hear. That's what you're saying there, right?
Yeah. And there's no ego. I mean, that's what it comes down to. And they're doing it for the sake of the whole, you know, the good of the whole. It's not about just me. And that's, again, what humans seem to have forgotten, that we think it's all about us. You know, we've got to get the biggest house, the biggest car, the biggest thing. Actually, does that bring you happiness, fulfillment? No, it doesn't. It's about how you can bring what your skills are to others in the best possible way. We're only here for a short while. And that's what your daughter already knows. She's bringing leadership from a different position. And that's wonderful. And she needs, you know, that support in that, which obviously you're giving her. But also, as I say, to remember that in most businesses, that will be smashed to pieces because the voices, you know, the pioneers have got the loudest voice and they are the more dominant ones. But it's coming. And, you know, that's, again, my what I love most is at the end that there's a respect built from, you know, I used to, as a pioneer, I don't really get on with financial people because they always tell me, no, you know, you're wanting to create something and they say, you can't afford it, you can't do it, you can't make that happen. And once you do a course with nature, you start to respect other people's views, perceptions, as I say, and the way they are, because they can still do the job just in a different way than you can. And it just opens your mind to something new.
Well, I have to admit, Rosie, as we started the conversation, I was a bit sort of confused on and beguiled on sort of how this was going to be applicable in my life and being able to retain it and use it for future use. But I will admit that I'm convinced. I like where this conversation went, and I love sort of the approach that you're taking. If no other reason, it allows me to get outside more often, which should be, you know, like should be priority number one for everybody. So, I really appreciate your time today. Thank you for coming on and sharing. And I will share how people can find you in the show notes below. And if you're interested in learning more information about it, again, it's in like Nancy-stinctive.com where you can find more about Rosie Tompkins.
Yeah. And my book online, Let Nature Be Your Compass. That'd be great. Brilliant. And, you know, I'd love to share with you more, and hopefully we will in the future, Devo. Thank you for having me on your program.
Brilliant. Thank you for your time as well. I'll talk with you soon.
Okay, bye for now.
So as we wrap up today's enlightening journey with Rosie Tompkins, it's clear that the path to unlocking our fullest potential really lies within each of us and waiting to be discovered through the power of nature and our innate natural intelligence. It's a fascinating concept to consider. And again, if you got nothing else from this show, know that there's always something different. There's another alternative to what you've been taught or an alternative way of doing something. And Rosie's insights have not only challenged us to rethink conventional leadership and team dynamics, but also to embrace our untapped resources within ourselves. And nature can help us do that. And in using animals and nature as sort of our guiding principles for that, it can reshape, if nothing else, just therapeutically, how we lead and how we show up as our best selves. So for those of you who are looking to dive deeper into Rosie's transformative methods and explore some of the wonders of her nature-centric coaching and leadership, be sure to check out her website. Again, that's in as in Nancy hyphen stinctive, and I'll put that in the show notes below. And remember, leadership and greatness isn't just about conforming to the usual norms like a lot of us seem to do, but it's about daring to tap into our natural strengths and our wisdom that lies within and around us, and especially in nature. So I encourage you to step out of your comfort zones on a regular basis. I encourage you to get outside and venture into nature. Take your shoes off, walk through the grass, stare at the sun, just do something that isn't sitting on your ass all day long in an office, and really tap into the potential, the innate potential that we as humans actually have. And it's not really designed to be sitting in an office all day tapping away at a keyboard or staring at our screen. So thank you, Rosie, for sharing your invaluable expertise and inspiring all of us to reconnect with our authentic selves and the natural world. And to our listeners, thank you for joining us on this episode of Unlearn Everything. Until next time, keep exploring, keep questioning, most importantly, and most importantly, keep unlearning. Have a wonderful day.